There is a secret that most pro athletes, elite CEOs, and high performers all know. They all have a group of world-class coaches working for them to help them optimize their potential. At Super Athlete Radio, our goal is to provide you with the caliber of world-class coaches and guests to help you unlock your potential, dominate your industry, and dominate your life. Let's get better today.
Amazing. And then you were drawn to start something over there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is so, you know, basketball is my life for a long time. And basketball also kind of, I mean, I legitimately say it saved me because I was a knucklehead kid, you know, involved in crime a lot from age 13 to 18, honestly, even beyond that. But the big part of the reason why I chose to go to play ball in college in the U.S., because I was already playing professional basketball in Slovenia, because the way that they do stuff there, it's not like high schools that are the best. It's the youth teams or the pro team. Right. So that's where the most competitive stuff happens. And I ended up going, you know, there's a long story to how this all happened. But the short story is, you know, I ended up making a decision to leave and go. I ended up going to junior college in upstate New York. And it was to separate me from, you know, to leave some of that life behind. But I was always into, like, you know, always into fitness. And really, like, when I went to college, I did 2 years in junior college, got a full ride in Southern Virginia. And then I went and played overseas in Ukraine and Slovenia, NBA Summer Pro League in 2004. And but, you know, my mom opened up a gym when I was 13 years old, because people are like, well, how did fitness happen? You know, when, because it's a very challenging time when your identity as a person is being an athlete. That's all you've done. At that point in time, I was just, you know, for 15 years, like, this is, I lived, breathed, you know, slept, dreamt basketball, right? Like, everything I did was like, hey, to make it in basketball. And so the thing is like, there's always kind of like an underlying, let's just call it toe, you know. And my mom opened up a gym when I was 13 years old, and she would basically, you know, work at the bank first half of the day, then go run the gym second half of the day. Her friend ran it the first part of the day, so they kind of split it, work two jobs. And like, I never, you know, I was exercising, like, I was playing ball, but I never lifted weights. And so I went to my mom's gym, and I was very fortunate because there were some people that would train there, like one of the top power lifters in the country at his weight class, like, trained there, and taught me a lot, you know, basics, but just a lot. And so that was one of the things. And then what was even crazier is that the bottom of this building, because this was like a physical education building, you know, back then, it was after the war, because Yugoslavia split up into, you know, obviously different countries. But in our area, you have these physical education buildings where you have, you know, basketball courts and tumbling, gymnastics and all that. And there was a little gym at the bottom of this place. And that gym was, you know, a couple of the top, I would say, guys in the world, like, you know, Olympic medalists, world champions in gymnastics. One was, this guy's name was Aliash Pagan. And he was basically world champion in straddle. Savage guys. Like, I mean, they were, you know, they were the best of the best. And they would come up and train there. And same thing, like, they would essentially, you know, teach me stuff, show me stuff. So, you know, here I am at 13. You know, I got a national powerlifting champion, like, literally elite world athlete, world gymnast, showing me stuff. And so I was a scrawny kid, you know, and I started lifting weights at 13 and at my mom's gym. And, like, that really, you know, 6 months later, I'm like, damn, like, I put on a whole bunch of muscle. So now, and I'm a little bit quicker, you know, all of a sudden I can touch the backboard. I can, you know, I can muscle the other players. And so that was a feedback loop for me, right? It was like, wow, weights, you know, give me better performance. They make me more confident because I can tell that I'm, you know, more muscular. Everybody would say it too, like, damn, man, like, what are you doing? So, you know, that kind of, just like anything when it comes to progress, right? Progress makes you more motivated.
And then real quick, I'd like to real quick, just to go back to what you said initially, I'm curious when you said that Slovenia, there's not really like college ball. There's guys who are playing younger. And do you feel like that's beneficial, or like, what could that look like maybe over here that could benefit? I mean, of course it's beneficial to play with older guys.
It's a loaded question because we might have to go into like AAU and how it's destroying kids. But yeah, I mean, for me, like, the experience of that was I mean, great. Like, and we, when I growing up, I trained for Olympia, which was like the number one team in the country. Pretty much any NBA player that's from Slovenia has kind of gone through there. And I mean, we trained hard. It's like very, think very disciplined, very, very hard training. But that's how it worked, where a lot of fundamentals. I think this is a really important one that, teaching, first of all, teaching kids, nobody's a superstar. Growing up, meaning even the best person on our team, you don't get the same treatment as you would here. It's like if you're the superstar on an AAU team and everybody just, bows and to you and you can kind of, do stuff and get away with it. That didn't fly there, right? Everybody bust their ass. Insane amounts of work on fundamentals, much more team play. So you didn't see, even the best players averaging crazy amounts of points per game. And I think that was, when I look back now, I'm like, that was very, very, very good and positive. I also think that it's part of the reason why, you've seen European players excelling in the league in these last, especially 10 years. And I would say the last five even more so, but the last decade has definitely changed a lot, in the NBA as well. And that's the way you work there. Essentially, high school ball is like, it's all right, but really you develop through the youth teams of the professional team, right? So there's a under 18, there's under 16, there's under, and obviously depending on how good you are, you can play for, like if I'm a 16 years old, I might be on under 16 and an under 18 team, right? And developing. And there's practices every day, you know what I mean? And it's just a lot more structured. And I think there's a lot more, I don't want to call them rules. You could call them rules, but boundaries, I would say, than there are here. Because I think kind of the AAU system is a little bit of the Wild Wild West. I mean, I think some people do it better, but I think it's, kind of crazy. And it doesn't, here's the thing, is it doesn't lend itself for the development of the kid, right? It's not built for that. It's not built for, like, it's to be real, Lee Taft talks a lot about this, and I love, what he has to say about it. But it's really made to profit, right? It's like AAU is like, oh, the goal is to be as profitable, as possible, versus like the goal is to develop all the kids in the system as much as possible, right? And prepare them for what's next. And by the way, what's next is not necessarily D1 college scholarship or pro sports. I mean, we know the percentages of kids that make it from one level to the next, and it's like extremely low. What you prepare, to me, like what basketball did for me, like I made it very far. I mean, I made it to the professional leagues, to some of the highest level leagues too. And a lot of folks were like, there's no way you'll make it. Like, I'm a 6 foot guy, there's you don't look at me and go like, this guy's a ball player. When I came to college, people were like, oh, you're the new guy on the football team, because I was pretty, big for a ball player. I was like 205, obviously lifting weights and everything. Yes, there's, I, they're like, oh, this guy's like a running back or something. And but the reality is, like, what ball gave me, which I think is much, is the most important part, is it taught me like values and built character, hard work, perseverance. I mean, like the teams I played for is like, you had to, like, I mean, you had to work so insanely hard to make the 12-man roster. Forget about the starting five. I mean, like the 12, like our team was so stacked in Olympia, like you had to, I mean, it was nuts. In school, like during this, school year, you're training, once a day. As soon as the school year is over, although the kids go on vacation, this, that, the other, we have like 2-a-days, and like I'm 13, 14, so on and so forth. So it teaches you discipline, teamwork, like working together, respect. It teaches you, again, communication skills. I mean, you name it, right? So it's like all of that later on, helped me. When I was done with my pro career and I went into fitness again, not to just kind of cut out this whole piece and segment of how I got there, but that's what helped me. That's what helped me in business, right? When you go to, like, being an entrepreneur is very, very, very challenging, right? If you don't have perseverance, if you can't overcome adversity, if you can't keep going when times are tough or you've had a ton of failures, there's no way you're going to make it. So all those things get taught in those developmental years to kids. And I think that if you kind of cut that out, meaning like hey, we're more concerned about like just the winning and the money and so on and so forth, I think you've taken your eye off the ball of like what we actually do this for, you know. So I think that's kind of like my short rundown on that. But I, you know, the way like I still, for instance, have coached the last 3 years the high school basketball team, the strength and conditioning side of it. I've worked with the pro team for the last 2 years, the pro rugby team, 2-time national champ, Seawolves, and especially on a youth part. The reason I like working with basketball, because it's not, you know, you definitely don't do it for the money, that's for sure. So it, to me, it's like, man, I get this opportunity to spend, you know, whether it's 3 hours, 4 hours per week with these kids and hopefully build character and instill skill sets, you know, have them shift their perspective about life or challenges and so on and so forth. And to, like, that's, you know, the best thing that I can do, by the way. And I'm very geeky about training. So the training part is like, absolutely, it's awesome. But like, it's more important that you help instill values. Again, hard work, effort, right? Hey, like efforts between you and you, 10 in, 10 out. Like you, this is going to, when you get out of high school, when you get out of college, wherever you go, whatever you do, that stuff's going to stay with you. And, you know, but I would say a lot of the other stuff might be gone. You know, you scored 30 points when you were 15 years old against XYZ person. Okay. You know, you're not going to remember that.
So those are some attributes that definitely transfer over from you being a professional athlete. One of the things that we talk about with our community a lot is you can learn from the best athletes in the world in terms of like how they manage their energy and where they put their focus and how they kind of oscillate between training and recovery. Is that something that you feel like you've incorporated to your, I mean, you're in the fitness community, fitness industry, but you feel like you transfer that over as well in terms of your life as a professional athlete?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think that first, you know, for example, let's take, you know, I was a perfect example of somebody that would push the hell out of it and not focus on recovery enough, you know. And I mean, when I was 17, I had real overtraining syndrome, you know, because people say like, oh, I'm overtrained. Over, like real overtraining syndrome is difficult to get, like very difficult to get. And I got it. It's, I mean, I was toast, you know. Imagine your, you know, your nervous system just completely shuts down. I mean, I was basically for, you know, 2.5, 3 months, I couldn't really do much. And you fall into depression. The symptoms are basically depression because the chemicals in your body get whacked. So I bring this up to say, you know, I train a ton, you know, wouldn't sleep as much as I needed to. Nutrition, I didn't pay attention to nutrition nearly as much as I needed to. But that lesson, you know, because from there, like I went to doctors, you know, doctors have a tough time figuring out. So I went to specialists. And that's kind of how, you know, we figured out like, hey, here's what's going on with you. And then I was able to learn through like really, really smart people. Like, here's what you did. Like, you know, there's a lot of stimulus, but there's not enough recovery. And I mean, this is one of the big training principles, right? SRA, which is stimulus recovery adaptation, right? Like, we have to be able to recover from what we, the stimulus that we create in our bodies, whether it's strength training, whether it's, again, conditioning, whether it's speed, whatever it may be, right? We can't just keep going and not like, get our recovery in it. So that was, again, that was like a huge learning lesson for me. And usually this is what happens, right? Like you tell somebody like, hey man, like, you know, even with clients, you have to like focus on recovery, right? If you don't have your sleep right, man, it's really going to affect how you adapt, whether it's building muscle, whether it's, you know, dropping fat, whatever it may be. And many times, you know, folks won't listen until, you know, until something happens. So hopefully they do. But that's a massive factor. And I learned it the hard way. But yes, like, for example, you know, the way that I explain it to even some of my pro athletes or my high level guys that are, you know, going high school, college and whatnot is, all right, you come in here or you get on the court and hopefully, right, you put in a 10 effort, right? Like you put in your maximum effort into training. And then if you're recovered, so if you eat like crap, you don't focus on hydration, you don't focus on your sleep, you don't focus on any of those things, right? And now out of that 10 that you put in, you might get a 6 out of it, right? Or a 5. So if I gave you, you know, if you gave me $100 and I gave you back 50, how'd you feel about that? Like, man, it's horrible. I'm like, that's what you're doing though, right? you're focusing on one aspect, and then that aspect is only giving you so much back because you're not focusing on the recovery part of it. You know, and again, the key for anybody is to get buy-in. The key to anybody is to first help them understand. You know, it has to click for them. We're like, man, I don't want that. Like, I want to put in $100 and get $100 out, right? Or I'm putting $100 and get $130 out. Okay. And it's like, how committed are you to that? Well, I'm very committed to that. Okay, great. So let's have a conversation. Let's start having conversations about what do you do in between training sessions? When do you go to sleep? What do you do before you go to sleep? Right. Opens up that window because I kind of have this four spokes on the wheel that I believe, you know, help move performance forward. There's training, there's nutrition, there's recovery, and then there's mindset. Right. And most people, you know, come to the gym or come into the performance space and just think like training. Oh, I just got to get my training on point. And, you know, maybe that's the spoke they need to address the most. But many a times, you know, and even with, again, with pro guys, you'd think that they have pro nutrition. Like most pro guys are, they're beginners in nutrition, right? So they might be advanced in training, but be very beginner in nutrition. And we, you know, we start with basics. It's like, imagine just, you know, talking to, you know, guys that make like $10 million a year and we're trying to get them to hydrate for a certain amount per day, like literally set a goal and, you know, get that protein number to where it's supposed to be. And you'd be surprised, you know, how many people do not get that. And then, and you just address those two and see some really good results, you know, in the short term because they're deficient in certain things. Right. And again, when you look into those boxes, and I you know, you want to simplify, obviously, because if you make it too complex, then you can't really relay the message. And from there, you know, you start going like, okay, how do we move forward? You know, reverse engineer, like this is what you want to achieve. And by the way, that goes for any, you know, for any client as well. But you go like, you know, if we are here on a GPS, this is point A, we are here. And you want to get to point B. And you tell me what point B is, be clear about it. What is, you know, what do you look like? What do you feel like? What's the performance like? What's the blood work like, you know, under the hood? Okay, cool. So now we have like the path on the GPS, right? And then obviously there's different routes. There's like, how do you get there the fastest route, you know, which is going to take probably more investment of time, energy, and money, right? It, again, if somebody's a pro, they can do that all day long. They can get a chef. They can train, you know, 6 days a week, no problem with me, blah, 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 blah. But somebody else is like, hey, I can do this. Okay, cool. It's a little bit of a different route. But either way, what we're doing is just, what's the next, you know, turn left. Okay, cool. Drive 2 miles, turn right. Like that's what the GPS does. That's what we as coaches, you know, do. And then we guide that person and, you know, keep them accountable, support them, challenge them, guide them through that process. And sometimes, you know, it's just like any other GPS, what happens? You're on the way and then it's like, oh, accident on I-5, reroute, right? And that may be life for them. That might be, you know, something that was, you know, unexpected and unanticipated. But that's how like my brain works on that side of things. And again, you know, that GPS, we got those four spokes and we look at those four spokes. It's like, hey, training's going great. Everything's awesome. But, you know, we really got to dial the nutrition up. We really, you know, you're sleeping 6 hours, 15 minutes on average per night. Like, we got to get you to 8. Let's, you know, we might not jump to 8, but let's get you from 6:15 to 6:45 and create a little bit better sleep ritual and do this, that, and the other. And, you know, we might keep training the same and over the course of 2 months, get their sleep to 8 hours. And all of a sudden, PRs, dropping body fat, better energy, you know, blood work gets better. So, you know, that's kind of like the idea is always moving forward, but recovery is so important. Because, I mean, in the big picture, it's like you can only train as hard as what you can recover from, period. And, you know, it's, by the way, like we get a lot of folks that are already fitness people and, you know, reach out and come through and say, hey, like, you know, I'm stuck. I heard that, you know, you're great with helping people get results. And then I start asking them stuff and they're like, oh yeah, I train 7 days a week, you know, and then out of those 7, 4 are Metcons, you know, 3 is this, I do that. I like to go for XYZ long runs. You know, once you dive in a little bit, you're like, wow, man, this person is completely under-recovered. You know, essentially they're, you know, the overused word of load management, right? And now it's a tough conversation because they're A-type personalities, obviously, right? They're like, man, they enjoy training. They want to push. How do you get them to reorganize their training. Because by the way, like I, telling somebody that's really likes to be active, that brings them kind of some type of also, mental health, enjoys the community, whatever it may be, to go like, oh, go from training 7 days a week to going to training 3 to 4.
That's where I think that's where I think the discipline comes in for them, because we deal with a lot of that here. I'm shit, I'm like that. But like, it's not yet, yeah, it's discipline for you to train 7 days a week, but it's not that hard because obviously you love doing it. So the discipline needs to come in for like, you need to step off the gas pedal. And we were talking about this last week in terms of like the origin of the word grind. That's from the Navy SEALs, the grinder, like where you come there and it's to grind you into dust, where they do calisthenics. It's like the start of their training, and then they build you back up. But if you're a high level athlete, or if you're a, someone who's trying to do big things professionally in the business community, you don't want to be ground in the dust. You want to be a finely tuned machine,
Right. I mean, you want to be just, you put it this way, you want to be ground down enough to where you can recover, adapt, and improve. And you made a good, great point. So there's this concept. I don't know if you've heard it, but it's so difficult, 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 easy. Right. And here's the thing. So for folks like, somebody that, again, myself, like I've always been, training is a part of my soul. Like I gotta train, right? And I was a 7 day a week person too. I still am a 6 day a week person. And we'll talk about like reorganizing what you do, on those different days. But what, for me, training was, after a while, difficult, easy. Like it's still hard. I train hard, but I've done it enough times, so it's easy, right? And I would say even for a fighter, by the way, that's fought a lot of times, it's difficult, easy. Okay. And somebody go like, well, that's never easy, but you're used to it. Okay. You're used to it. So, but what might be, for somebody that always is a yes person, which I used to be as well. Like I'm a very, like, I want to help everybody. I want to do everything, this, that, the other. What's difficult, difficult for that person? Saying no.
No.
What's difficult, difficult for a person that trains 2 days and 7 days a week is like taking a recovery day. Or, going and just working on mobility for a little bit. Or, like again, that might be difficult, difficult. Or somebody that doesn't, it's like trains really, really hard, and that's difficult, easy, but getting their nutrition in check is difficult, difficult. And because look, a lot of things are hard, right? Like if I take a shovel right now and I go in the middle of the street and create a hole, right? That's gonna be really hard. I'm just banging into concrete with the shovel. I mean, but the thing is, what am I trying to achieve? Oh man, I'm working really hard. Okay, what do you want to do? I want to create a hole. I mean, is there easier ways to create a hole? Absolutely, right? So I think a lot of times, you want to find out and discover and kind of be a little bit of detective to go, you're working really hard in this area, and it's actually getting you nowhere, or it's depleting a lot of your energy. That could be used to actually moving you forward. And sometimes you got to zoom out. And then that's, I mean, honestly, that's part of the role, I play, that we play as coaches, is as that analogy says, like you can't read the label from inside of the bottle, right? And you're inside the bottle, so you don't know what you don't know. Somebody from the outside has better perspective and then can read that label better. And that goes for, I talk about this in business, right? In training, it's the same thing. With your lifestyle, it's the same thing. You start pointing things out, be like, hey, I've noticed like you work really hard here. How is that helping you move towards your goal? And like doing this, where is it taking energy away from? Right. And then it's like, whoa, okay, that's a good point. Because, my question always is it more important for you to, train 7 days a week, in this example, or is it more important for you to get the result, which might be like get leaner, get stronger, XYZ? And, if they're like, no, that's the most important thing. I want to get healthier and stronger and leaner. Okay. So if that's the most important, are you willing to make some adjustments here so that you can achieve this goal? But again, you have to show people what's stopping them so that they can buy into the new path. Right. And I mean, I've done this so many times that sometimes it takes, weeks. I've had it where I've had to kind of I would say massage the programming and everything for a couple months, and then slowly get to that new place, because it's too much of a shift and it's too much of a change. Like, I'm not giving it up, right? In that scenario, for example, you know, it might be that, like, hey, you stay training 7 days a week, but one day is all like mobility work. You know, you got three hard strength training sessions. You got one hard conditioning session, and then two of them are just aerobic capacity work, you know, zone two. Not very stressful. So, hey, you're still getting your 7 days a week in, but now we're managing the intensities. We're doing more of a high-low model that people respond much better, especially people like that respond much better too.
Yeah, it takes some brain power to take the time to schedule that. Like, we have a number of people come on the show. It's one of the things, like, if I find out that we have a coach or an executive, someone on the show who's worked for a championship team in the last 5 years, whether that's the NBA or MLB or NFL, I ask them, like, what in terms of, like, organizationally why you feel like this team is so successful? And the most consistent answer is that they know exactly what they want, and then they know exactly what it takes to, like, what the steps are to achieve that goal, and then they're ruthless about cutting stuff out. And the reason I bring that up there is, like, what you're talking about, like, with, I want to work hard by putting the shovel into the ground. Well, why are you doing that? Like, really, why are you, like, what is that working toward? And I think it, like, in the world we live in now, like, that's how you get ahead, where there's the internet and there's AI and there's all this information. Well, how are you going to decipher, like, what's the right move? It's having that formula.
Correct. Yeah, you got it. I mean, that's it. Like, the great point is that, you know, you want to have a path and a plan, right? And I would say, if you don't have a path and a plan, the default is struggle, because the default is what got you where you are right now, right? So, and then, yes, absolutely, you know, if you have a path and a plan, it helps you go, like, okay, what is the next step, right? It gives me clarity. And it also, you know, one of the questions that I love is, like, okay, if you say yes to this, what are you saying no to, right? Again, it's like, when you have finite, and by the way, this is a time thing, a money thing, or a training thing, right? Okay, if you say yes to playing another 2 hours of basketball here, like, what are you saying no to? And then, does that align with where you want to go? And we could do that on, you know, on our organizational chart. You could go, you know, protein, work with protein, same thing. We have a XYZ amount of time in the week to train the athletes. We have, you know, off season is 4 days, in season about 3 days in the gym, right? Okay, what are we doing with that time? There's so much time on the field. If you say, hey, it would be great to get these guys in and do some tempering and do this, that, the other, it's like, okay, but that's going to get taken away from something else, and you got to weigh it out, right? So is that what we need to get to where we want to go? You're saying no to something. Yeah, you say yes to something, you say no to something. And again, like, if you don't have a path or a plan, the default is struggle. Or should I say, the default is where you are right now. But usually, you know, people are like, hey, I don't like being here. I want better. And what you're doing got you here, right? So there's things that have to change. And, you know, that's the reality of it. And we juggle a lot. I mean, let's be real, right? I mean, I just mentioned four different pockets. I think what's the key, and by the way, this goes now into behavior change. And I would weigh it out a little bit between, you know, what is even a high level client? But if I say, hey, somebody in the general population, they're a teacher or somebody that's a pro athlete, the truth is, you know, the science of self-control, the science of behavior change is the same, right? So you can't give people too much to take on, because they'll get frustrated, right? They'll feel incompetent. That's not good. That's frustration. You know, if you give people too little, they'll get bored. You know, that's what's called the Goldilocks effect. It's like that, like 5-7% harder than what they're doing now, that challenges them, but isn't too much. And that's where the magic lies in coaching as well, right? Like, and I could do that. I could talk about this on a micro and a macro level. So on a micro level, let's take, I'm in a training session, right? And if I'm giving this, you know, newer beginnerish client, like, all right, great. Well, let's just start doing back squats, right? And they're just like, whoa, like, I don't know how to brace tight hips. You know, they don't understand, like, they don't really have that movement pattern down, because they haven't really been doing it a lot. I'm setting them up for failure, right? But if I'm like, hey, listen, grab this kettlebell, step on this wedge. All right, soft means just think about getting your butt down to the ground. And it's like self-correcting and it looks good, right? Maybe we need to coach it up some, but it looks better. Still challenging for them, right? Like that 5, 6, 7% of, you know, but now it's challenging, but you can do it. Okay, so because if I keep trying to go, no, like put the bar on your back. Okay, I want you to break the bar. You know, it's too much. It's too many coaching cues. They can't handle it. And now they're frustrated. They probably won't come back because it's like, man, I felt like shit. Like I felt like I'm completely incompetent. Nobody wants to feel that, right? Now, you could do that with a pro athlete. They pick up stuff way faster, right? But still, if I start having them do a whole bunch of stuff that's very, very new, and they're just like, I can't get this, you know, and you can't get it for like 5, 6, 7 minutes. Now you're, again, that's not going to be a good session. They feel frustrated. They don't feel like they're getting better. So that's on a micro level in a training session. You know, on a macro level, if I zoom out, is if I go, okay, great. Well, listen, how about this? Let's have you, and by the way, this could be gym pop or a pro athlete. I'm going to have you start tracking macros every day, right? And they might be like, I mean, they barely know what they're eating every day. They don't have any structure. And now all of a sudden, I'm like giving them a very challenging task right from the get-go, right? Track every meal, track macros, put them in MyFitnessPal, you know, and it's just like, whoa, overwhelming. But if I said, hey, listen, all I want you to focus on is get 40 grams of protein with every meal. Don't worry about anything else right now. But, and then this is what 40 grams of protein is in lean ground beef and fish. And actually, like, I'll show you pictures of it. And this is the ounces and stuff of it, right? So if you can kind of get there, you know, how confident do you feel that you can do that? And by the way, this is, I call it the magic question, right? The magic question is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident do you feel you can do this 90% of the time? Okay. If the person says 9 or 10, we're good. If they say 8, I'm kind of getting a little not sure. 7 is a no-go. Anything 7 and below is a no-go, right? So let's say they give me a 7. I'm going to do one of two things. I'm going to say, what do we need to do to get you to a 9 or 10 here? And they might actually give me the solution. They might be like, well, I don't know, man. I might have to do meal delivery or get a chef if they can afford it. I don't know, right? Like, okay, great. Can you do that? Yeah. All right, let's go with that route. But if they don't have a solution, we'll just make it easier. We might go, hey, listen, how about can you do 40 grams of protein just for breakfast? And then here's some options. Yeah, I feel like a 10 confidence on that. Great. Let's go with that for the next 10 days, 14 days. Right? So this is the science of, I would say, behavior change and understanding it. Some people could take on a bunch more because they have more skill sets. But somebody that's, again, pro athlete but newbie with nutrition, if I give them too much stuff, they're not going to be successful. You know, and then somebody will go like, don't you want it enough? Aren't you committed? And it's like, that's dumb because that means you really don't understand how this works, right? Because again, you could tell me right now, hey, I need you to, you know, clean your whole office and home. Man, it's too much. Thankfully, my girlfriend is very like OCD and organizes the hell out of stuff. But it's like whatever task in life, if I give you too much to do, you're going to be overwhelmed. You're going to shut down. And again, we can look at that in those spokes of training, nutrition, recovery, mindset. And so the goal is to just push, you know, people forward little by little. And obviously, sometimes, you know, people can take on a lot, but that's very individual. Right, somebody comes in and is like, for example, the motivation is high, or should I say, the anchor is bigger. I got a wedding in 4 months. Right, I want to lose 50 pounds. Like, man, it's a lot. And it becomes one of those things where it's just like they are willing. Hey, you know, ideally you train with me 4 days a week, and I'll draw it on a chart. You know, here's the slower way to get there. Here's the faster way to get there. But faster way is going to take more commitment. You're going to have to dial in your nutrition more. We're going to have to do this. We're going to have to do that. And they have a big enough anchor and they're like, okay, I'm a 9 out of 10 on that. You know, how confident do you feel that you can do that? Right. So this is what I, you know, what I love about coaching, right? Because it's a science and it's an art. And I think I was talking to Brett Bartholomew and it's like, what's the official kind of breakdown of what are the three components of coaching? You know, it's communication, it's problem solving, and it's technical expertise. You know, it's everything from program design to understanding the actual science, right? Like,
and in the fitness industry, that seems like the most common skill that people have.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's interesting because there's a pendulum, I think. You know, there's a lot of folks that like really know their stuff, right? The science of stuff, right? But aren't great at communicating. You know, and to me, it's like you can be super smart and knowing the X's and O's, but if you can't communicate it to a client, if they don't feel like, you know, if you can't get them to buy in and you can't build rapport and you can't be likable. I mean, listen, this is a conversation that's not had enough, but like you can be the smartest person, you know, on the training side, but you're unlikable. You're toast. Like there's, especially in the private sector, right? Especially in the private sector. But I would say even in a professional sector, if you're, you know, an S&C collegiate coach, but man, people have to want to be around you and train with you if they're going to continue to come back and won't give a shit. You know, it's like, oh man, this guy really knows his stuff, but man, he's a dick. Like, okay, you're done. So, you know, that's where, again, so you have those folks, then you have folks that are like great energy, great personality, awesome with people, you know, but really don't know their stuff. And then it's like, well, now how can you get me the best results if you don't know your stuff? So obviously it's like the gelling of those two, which is challenging. And I think that people gravitate to the things that they like. So it's like, oh man, I love training. So I'm just going to study training. Right. But it's like, hey, yeah, but you have to study behavior change. You have to study communication. You have to study, you know, improve your listening skills. You have to, hey, like work on your speaking skills. Guess what? You're going to be speaking in front of people a lot. Right. I'm running a class. Forget about Toastmasters. I did masterminds with Roger Love on my tonality, on speaking, on frequency of speech, of bringing the tone down and then bring it out when I have to. Right. I mean, I did that stuff for years and years. One, to be a better speaker, but also when I run a class, like I can control the class with my voice, with my tone. I can tell stories. I can go high. I can go low. I can go to Susie, who's, you know, 70 years old. Hey, Susie, great job here. But Jay, pick the fucking weight up. You know, like, it's like you coach each individual, even in a group session. And like, there's so many aspects to it that, you know, and I get fired up about this because I think too many times, you know, it's kind of like the industry is like, oh, yeah, oh, you're a trainer. Okay. Like, you know, you hold the pad, you do this, you do that. And it's like, man, it's at the highest level. It is an incredible, incredible, incredible craft that takes a lifetime to master, just like anything else.
Because you got to get find all the different ways to find that way to with that specific person to get that buy-in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the thing is, like, buy-in is step one. I mean, like, you can't even, I would say, transfer the knowledge, you know, I would say, if you don't have buy-in, you know. And there's in sales, there's a saying that goes like, you know, that a sale happens, you know, through transferring certainty over a bridge of trust. Like, let me repeat that, right? Transferring certainty over a bridge of trust. So that's how a sale happens, right? Like if I'm certain, like if you talk to me about, you know, hey, I was thinking about coming to Vigor Ground and training with you, here's my goal, so on. And like, when I speak to you, I believe so much in what we do, right? I'm going to transfer that certainty, but first I have to build some trust. And that might be, by the way, you know, building trust might be, you're good at it. You can build rapport pretty damn fast. Trust can already be built also through, you know, things like this, podcasts, social media, email newsletters, right? Where people are already, you know, hearing stuff from you, getting value from you. And they're like, oh man, I trust this person. I mean, I think that's where, you know, kind of content and marketing and all those things come into play if you do it right. But again, then, you know, it's like, imagine speaking to somebody, you go and talk to them about fixing your car, and you got this super nice car you really care about. And you're like, hey, look, something went wrong. Nobody can fix it. You know, but like, this car matters a lot to me. My dad handed it down to me. And that person's like, yeah, I hope that we can do something with your car. I mean, you know, I'll do my best, you know, I think we can hopefully fix it. You're like, this shit's not certain. This guy's not certain. You're not transferring that. You started getting like, well, I don't know. Like, you start getting worried. But if you're like, hey, we've dealt with situations like this 1,000 times before, what's probably happening is one of these three things. We're going to look into it. We're going to analyze it. We'll take care of your baby. I know we know how important this is to you. Like, I will do absolutely everything to make sure it's just the way it was before, where it was better. And you're like, okay, cool. All right, let's do it. Here's the keys. Like, I'll drop my car off with you, right? Because there was certainty, right? And so, again, how do you build certainty? How do you build confidence? Well, here's the deal. I actually was speaking in Dallas at a big fitness event, talking about some, again, how to succeed in industry. And I said, here's my formula for confidence, right? It's competence, skill, right? So if you've practiced your skill and you're like, man, I'm good at the skill, like, you're going to be more confident. Number two is production, proof. Like, I if I have proof, undeniable proof that, like, I can do the thing that I say I'm going to do, I'm going to be much more confident, right? So, I've coached over 4,000 people. Like, I know I can get results with anybody. I know because I've done it, right? So you need competence, you need proof, right? You need production. And then number three is courage, because sometimes, guess what? You're going to have to lean into hard shit, right? And the more courageous things that you do, the more it builds your confidence up. So, you know, and that becomes certainty. So if somebody goes like, well, how do I become certain, Luca? I'm like, well, guess what? You're going to have to do a lot of deliberate practice. You know, whether it's a sport, whether it's coaching, whether it's, you know, building a business, whether it's creating content, whether it's shooting podcasts, whether I you know, you name it. You can break the skill set down into practice. You can practice it every day, right? How do I get better in front of the camera? Well, I mean, start shooting videos of yourself and talking on Reels, you know, do lunch and learns locally in front of people, even if it's a group of 5 people, 10 people, right? You want to get better at doing a left-handed hook shot. You're going to have to go in the gym and deliberately practice, not just fuck around, but like deliberately practice left-handed hook shots. You know, once you get better at them, now you're going to have somebody guarding you. And then after that, you're going to have somebody guarding you with that little big ass hand that's 6 feet tall. So you have to shoot it over him, right? Like, you progress that practice. And then over a course of a year, now you got a great left-handed hook shot because you practice it. I think that's one of my biggest, I would say, things to where when people are like, I want to become XYZ, you know, great athlete. I want to, you know, build XYZ business. I want to get leaner. And then I'll start diving into, okay, well, when are you working on that? Oh, what do you mean? In your schedule, where do you work on this skill set that you say that you want to build? And then we go into the calendar. You know, it's like there's no time blocked out for the thing that they said they want to do. And there's an analogy that I share all the time. It's called the watch and the wallet. And the watch and the wallet, basically, it tells me what you're committed to, right? Because folks are like, what do you mean? I said, well, you told me you're committed to, you know, this year, losing this weight, getting the healthiest you've ever been. All right, so let's first look at the watch. That's your calendar. That's your time. Let's look at your schedule. Okay, where are your scheduled gym sessions? I go after work. Are they scheduled? No. Okay, so that means they're not important enough to be in your calendar and non-negotiable. Got to be in your schedule. What about your meal prep? It's not in there. Well, how are you going to, again, have a path and a plan and eat the right meals to get you to your goals? If you take 0 time per week to actually think it through, organize it, you know, I call it the number one habit. It's plan, prepare, cook. That might mean maybe you won't cook it, but you'll know where you're going to eat, what you're going to eat. So that's not in your calendar. All right. You know, ideally you'd have a trainer. Like, do you have a trainer? No, I don't have a trainer. Okay, so we're looking at your watch, we're looking at your time, and the things that you say that you want to achieve are not scheduled in your calendar. That's going to be a problem, right? And then second is wallet. That's your money, right? And you go, you said you're committed to this, but I see no trainer, no gym membership, no meal delivery, you know, nothing that invests into the thing that you say you want. But I see 3 nights a week, I see drinks, which means, okay, you're going to a bar. I see 11 subscriptions, fucking Hulu, Peacock, Netflix, like everything that exists, right? Those subscription is, okay, $140, $150 a month right there. Oh, there's NFL League Pass, right? So you are spending time and money in things that are taking you away from what you're telling me that you're committed to. So your watch and wallet are going to tell me what you're committed to. And it's harsh, but it's like, but it's real. Because time, energy, money, focus into something, whatever you focus on is going to grow. Whatever you focus on, that's going to be worked on. And, you know, you have to start with like analysis, right? Like there's a saying that goes, awareness precedes change. True. But I would say assessment precedes awareness. So you're like, hey, I want to get really fast. I want to run a 40-yard dash. Great. Let's do a very, very thorough warm-up and let's test your 40-yard dash. Oh, shit, 6'2". All right? So now we did an assessment. Now you're aware. Man, I said I want to run a 4.6 and I'm like a 6'2". So I have awareness now that I am much slower than what I want to be. Cool. I want to get my trap bar deadlift to XYZ. I want to get, you know, we do an in-body. Hey, you're 24% body fat, but you said you want to be 10. Ooh, that hurts. I know, but guess what? Awareness. Awareness precedes change. Now let's make a plan. So same thing with the watch and the wallet, right? It's we're assessing it, and now that's creating awareness. Like, hey, you say that you really want to do this, but you're spending almost no time on the thing that you say you want to get better at. And again, just what I was talking about before, like the skill set part, right? Like we can break everything down into, you know, again, practice and skill sets. Like I'm a voracious reader. You actually can't see I know I can see you got a lot of books. Like I'm in my podcast studio. There's like 900 books here. And then I got another 800 at home. Like I read a ton, right? I study a ton. But guess what? When you look at my schedule, like reading is in my schedule, right? It's like, hey, 20 minutes here, 30 minutes here. Over the weekends, a lot of times I'll block out like 2 hours. I got my thinking time, right? It's there. So it gets done because it's non-negotiable. You know, same thing. And again, we can veer off into any direction you want to, right? Like, hey, want to build a better relationship with your girlfriend or wife. Okay. Do you have date night at least once a week? You know, do you have date night with your kids? Like, does it matter? Is that what you want to improve? It's got to be in there because we waste so much time, you know, at work. And, you know, there's all the stats and the data, like the average, I would say American works about 3 hours and 30 minutes. I might be like a couple minutes off here and there, whatever, but right. That's how much productive time you're getting per day. And people are like, I don't have time, but it's like also the average person here in this country watches close to 5 hours of TV per day, right? 5 hours. By the way, you can still watch two and get 3 hours back. What are you going to do with those 3 hours? Hour training session, 30 minutes of study, extra an hour and a half with your family, right? But we end up doing a lot of the stuff, you know, that would, let me run it back a little bit. So let's call it distraction, right? We get distracted, and I had the author of the book Indistractable, Nir Eyal, on my podcast, which was great. But one point that, you know, he made that was so good that, you know, after studying the distraction for 5 to 6 years, is like the number one reason, like, you know, the reason we get distracted, they're not external. There's not pings and dings and stuff like that. It's internal, right? We get distracted because we don't want to face our emotions, right? So again, it's like, you know, oh man, I got to do this extra work to finish this project, and you get uncomfortable, and then you go on social media, right? Because it's like, all right, I'm avoiding my feelings, so I'm being distracted now by social media, right? Or you're going through a stressful time in your life, maybe a relationship thing, and it's like, okay, now I drink wine every night, you know, just to try to calm myself down. But no, you're avoiding that emotion. Same thing with food. Same thing with spending money, right? Like, I'm stressed out, I'm going to go stress shopping, right? And then, but then you go like, I can't afford this. Well, you can't afford it because you spend 800 bucks a month on, you know, designer bags and shoes. Cause that makes you avoid a certain feeling, right? So again, like we have to, you know, the hardest thing to do in life is to face reality. And I, by the way, I'm here to be like, not stand on a pedestal and pretend like I got it all figured out. You know, every one of us has their own things that you have to become aware of that has to go, oh, okay, I say I'm committed to this, I got to change it. I fucked up so many things in my life that I say thankfully learned from them some very, very hard things to then, you know, take it to the next level. But same thing. It's hard. It was so hard facing that. I was like, who, you know, whose responsibility and fault is it? And it's like, whoop, and finger points right back to you, right? It's mine, right? Because you, the moment you start going like, oh, you know, it's the economy, it's my genetics, it's, you know, my boss, my, there's always something, right? Like the moment you point the blame to a different person, the power goes where you point, right? So it's like, I'm blaming XYZ, so I'm just giving the power to everybody else. But if you go like, hey, maybe it's not my fault, but it's definitely my responsibility, right? Or hey, that's definitely my fault. Like I have to take care of that. I just gave power back to myself because now I'm like, I have control in changing those things. And that's powerful. You know, it's hard to do, right? But it's powerful. And it is, at first it's like, you want to avoid it because it's difficult to go like, oh shit.
Which is enervating, I think. Like, even though you avoid it because it's easy, it's the energy zap.
But at 100%, 100%. Because it's like, you know, what did we talk about? Like, I just had a client yesterday. Legitimately going through some rough things, like in life, in multiple factors, right? And, you know, she's like, man, I don't know what to do here. I said, let me ask you something. What can you do? And then we started talking about it. I said, you know, and the whole conversation is like, it would start veering off, but I can't. I said, no. What can you do? And we started writing it down. Control what you can control, right? Spheres of control. Because it's very easy to go like, yeah, but this happened and that's not my fault. And I 100% agree with you. What can we do? What can you do? What can you do? And it would start writing it down. Okay. Cool. So tomorrow, going to do this, going to do this. Is that in your control? Yes, it is. Great. Right. And now all of a sudden, it's like you're getting somebody to take their power back because they're focusing on what they can do. It's very hard. I mean, like, I've had some very, very challenging personal life things, business things happen in the last 4 months. And it's so easy to be like, oh, woe is me. They did this, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then all of a sudden, you find yourself swirling off, like, you know, being distracted here, doing this, doing that. But if you just go, let me make a path and a plan. What can I control? Okay, I'm going to go gusto. I'm going to go focus in on this and do the things that I can do. As, you know, as Buddha said, if you can't change it, why worry about it? And if you can change it, why worry about it? Go do work, right? And I probably didn't phrase him 100% correctly, but.
You fucked up that Buddha quote. God damn it. Yeah, well, if you look at I think it was good. If you look at the best mental performance coaches in the world, they are absolutely ruthless about that specific concept. So, you know, to be able to have that skill, that takes reps, but I mean, it's absolutely life-changing to have that skill to be able to be ruthless about taking it in of terms of what's happening to you, but then it's like, okay, what can I control and what can I do? Luca, one of the qualities that I really admire in you is your love of learning. Where does you feel like that comes from, and when did that kind of start for you?
One of the things that, like, so when you grow up in Slovenia, you know, like, you early on they have you read, you know, Dostoevsky, like. Waiting for Godot, you know, write an essay on it. I mean, early, right? So you get to read a lot. And I didn't necessarily, I would say, get excited about reading all those things. So for me, it clicked when I was explaining when I was 13 years old and, you know, started training and stuff. And getting this, like, bug for, like, whoa, like, you know, if I work hard, I can get stronger, I can jump higher. And then I started studying that, right? And I'll get books on it. And that was the turning point for me, because it was like, hold on, like, I can learn about something I want to, and from these really smart, best in the world people, and then I can take their knowledge because they've done however much, you know, studying. And this is, you know, when I would start reading the old manuals, you know, Vladimir Zatsyorsky and Verhoshansky and Tudor Bompa and, like, you know, the Mel Siff eventually. And, like, I mean, I was speeding when I was 15, 16 years old, you know, Charlie Francis's, you know, Speed Trap book. And I mean, all the stuff that I could get my hands on. And, you know, back in the day, the best online resources were places like Elite FTS and T Nation. And I mean, I would just devour that stuff. Right. But, and then whatever was recommended, it was like, oh, buy this book, buy, you know, this book, this book. So I was just going through stuff. And, but really, it was, you know, about learning something that I wanted, something that mattered to me. And I think that's what it really comes down to, right? Like, if you get somebody that has this desire about something, right? And as a kid, by the way, like I was, you know, I'm the youngest brother. You know, I was made fun of a lot. Like when I started playing basketball, it wasn't like this passion. I never got picked. I was the scrawniest kid, never got picked. You know, there was a chip on my shoulder, right? So we, you know, as a kid, I'm like, you want to be seen. You want significance. You know, it's part of the reason why I did criminal things. Like, you know, when I turned that age as well. And so, if you can attach learning to a thing that matters to you, right? That's what happened for me. And I'm looking back now, you know, kind of foresight, kind of 2020, right? But like, that's what got me into it because I became curious. You know, curiosity is a superpower, and I think curiosity is a value. It's a value I still hold right up there. Like, you know, to be like a child and just want to learn, right? But for me, performance was like, man, if I can jump high and run faster than everybody and get stronger and like become a great basketball player, I'll be seen. You know what I mean? People will recognize me, you know, and they didn't. Fuck them. So I would just start diving into this stuff and learning about all this stuff. And, you know, the feedback loop, if you apply what you learn, is so good, right? So I'm like, oh, I learned this thing about plyometrics. All right, cool. I'm gonna go on a track and I'm gonna do these plyometric drills. I'm gonna do bounding, I'm gonna do depth drops and blah, blah. You know, and like 3 months later, I'm like, yo. Like I could barely touch the net. Like now I'm slapping the backboard, you know, and another 3 months later, I'm like, yo, I'm touching the. So I'm having a feedback loop of like, I'm learning from the best, then I'm doing it, I'm getting better. And when you do that at a young age, you know, for me, that was just mind blowing because that ingrained like into my nervous system. Like if you, like you can learn, and I remember a mentor of mine, but it's now a good friend, Alan Cosgrove, said, hey, if you can read and if you can learn, you can learn anything and everything that anybody's ever learned, which is crazy, right? So you think about a book, like the value of a book, which is mind-boggling to me, that folks will be like, oh man, books are expensive. It's like, what? You know, you pay $20 and somebody that's been doing something for 20 years and is the best in the world at it, and they basically try to encapsulate it in 300 pages and give you their best stuff. And if you apply one thing, it might be worth, I don't know, like let's say it's something in sales, right? And it's like you learn how to sell this high ticket package and you just sell one and you got 100x return on it. You know what I mean? 1,000x return. Who knows? So to me, that was like I really had a light bulb moment with that. And that's where my kind of my obsessiveness with learning started, and it's never stopped because, you know, as you grow, I mean, we never stop learning, right? There's seasons of life and there's different things that we have to learn. And that I think, you know, and by the way, like books are phenomenal. They're very easy access, right? They don't cost a lot. But for me, that went to, you know, to courses, to workshops, to seminars, to certifications. You know, it's been, let's see, 17. So 17 plus years. I think there's only been 1 year that I haven't been in at least one mastermind or high level coaching program. You know, I've been to 300 events, a lot of them speaking myself, but you know, at the beginning, it was just going to tons of events, just learning hands-on. And I think this is a story that I want to share and tell because I think this is it's powerful. Like, there's a book called The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle, and yes, it's excellent. But it talks there, you know, like which is not far from me. There's a city in Italy called Florence, from where I was born and raised. It's probably about a 3 hours drive, and Florence, you know, in the 15th century, in a kind of the Renaissance, it basically developed some of the greatest, you know, artists, creators of our time. Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, Dante Alighieri. And by the way, you can look it up. The list is goes on and on and on. And this was in less than a, you know, 100-year period, right? And since then, and by the way, this is not like a big city. It's a very small city in Italy. right? And it had more people than the whole world, basically, you know, in many senses. And you go like, how's that possible, right? And one of the things is that they had this apprenticeship model, right? The apprenticeship model, and it was pretty extreme. It was like, you're going to apprentice under the master for 10 years. Like, and then at 10 years, it's like, okay, you're ready now. Go do your thing, right? And these folks went and did these unbelievable things. And I think that we've lost that, you know, as on, obviously it still exists, but I'm saying on average, we've kind of lost this apprenticeship model. And, you know, in the coaching space, I spent and still spend a lot of time being around people that like, you know, I want to learn from. Again, there's now, you know, we have internships and, you know, I mentor a lot of people and I do online coaching, consulting and all this other stuff, but I myself am still going to places learning from folks, whether it's, you know, hey, like some of the best guys on the planet are Altus, you know, Dan Pfaff and Stu McMillan, and Stu's become a good friend. And I've gone out and watched what they're doing. Like my brother's done like 3 mentorships with him now, you know, where he goes there for 9 days, you know, 9 days every day you're watching what they're doing. It's an apprenticeship model. And then you're going online, doing this, that, the other, and applying. But I think that, you know, if you really want to kind of like a cheat code, man, be an apprentice. You know, another great documentary that I love rewatching every year is, you know, Jiro Dreams of Sushi, who is, you know, Jiro's like the greatest sushi maker, only 3-star Michelin restaurant in the world, you know, in a little Japanese Tokyo subway. And the guy's obsessed. I mean, I think now he's like 90 plus years old, you know, and all like, he just cares about making the best sushi. You know, he's like, I'll never make it, but I'm going to spend my life trying to make the best sushi. And same thing, like there's, you know, if you're under him, like he doesn't let you touch the rice for 2 years because the rice is such an important part of the sushi, you know. And there's actually a guy, his name's Shiro, that worked for him that's in a documentary that now has a restaurant in Seattle. He's had a restaurant in Seattle for a while. Incredible. And now, you know, what I see today is like, oh, let me go through this thing really quickly. Cool. Like now I'm going to go and online and talk about it. It's like you need thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of deliberate reps, you know, not just reps, deliberate reps, because we know from research that deliberate practice is the only thing that actually improves your skill set. Which brings me to another book. It's called So Good They Can't Ignore You by Cal Newport, which breaks down, you know, deliberate practice and career capital and talks about like the, how, you know, how we get better. And I, you know, I find that so fascinating and intriguing, but it's powerful to know, hey, like, whatever thing it is that you want to become great at, you can do it, right? And here's a process. And I mean, one, the cheat code is get around people that are doing it, immerse yourself into it, become an apprentice, you know, spend a fuck ton of time deliberately practicing it. And you'll get ahead of folks that have, you know, very short attention spans and they can't do anything for long, right? And, but the thing is, when you can't do anything for long, you can't become good at anything. And it's, again, we could fill in the blank of what it is that you want to do. Is it sports performance? Is it getting healthier? Is it building muscle? Is it getting stronger? Is it getting healthier? You know, is it building a bit, becoming great at marketing, becoming great at content? Like, it doesn't matter. We take the skill set, we break it down into practice, and then we organize practice in a way where we just continuously develop, you know? And again, that to me, like learning is a superpower. And I think it was, Mark, I was listening to a podcast from Mark Cuban not that long ago, and they were asking him like, hey, you know, what do you think is going to be the game changer coming into the future, you know, in different industries around the world? And, you know, and he was like, it's like pharmaceutical robotics, you know, he's talking about this, that, and the other. But he said, look, here's who's going to have the advantage. The person that has learned how to learn the fastest. Because remember, learning is a skill set. So if I can learn 5 times faster than another person, I mean, imagine that. Things are changing, but I'm learning new things and I'm being able to apply them and absorb them. Like that's the people that are going to have the advantage in the future. Because at the end, he was like, we could go into the different industries and this, that, the other, all good. But like the person that can learn the fastest, that's learned how to learn, man, that person is dangerous, right? And like,
and we have a lot of entrepreneurs and CEOs who listen to this, and you're talking about mastery and you're talking about learning as a skill. Do you have any pathways that you use yourself or that you recommend to be able to say no to stuff, and or how do you learn faster? How do you improve that?
So there's so a couple of things. You know, one, like a long time ago, I did I remember the Jim Quick's course on how to read faster. And by the way, there's, you know, it's not like you just go through the course and voila, you know, you have to apply. I spent like probably 2 years working on a lot of those skills that I learned that did help me read faster. You know, I probably read at about 500 words per minute now, average is about 180 to 220. And that took me a long time. I even went to, you know, a site that would basically, you know, you'd have words coming across the screen at your 180 to 200 kind of words per minute. And then you'd type in and speed it up to like 250. And I'd read at that pace for a while. And then I would go read a book, right? And then I would speed it up to 280 and so on. They're progressive overload, just like you'd progress your, you know, weights and your reps and your sets or the load. I was doing that with reading while implementing some of the cognitive skills that I learned from Jim, for example, right? And that allowed me over time to be able to read faster cognitively, right? Not like scan, but like actually take it in. But here's a little kind of like, I'm gonna say trick, but how I apply learning. So when I learn something, you'll see, like I do this, you know, I take a lot of notes, right? So I'm always taking notes because it's shown that like if I study something, the moment that I take notes, I'm gonna remember more of it. But then what I'm gonna do is I'm going to go do it. So let's take different scenarios. I'm watching through, you know, Les Spellman's acceleration stuff, and I'm watching the videos and I'm going through it and I'm taking notes. When I'm done, whether it's that day or the next day, like as soon as possible, I'm going to go do the stuff myself, right? Because now as I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, okay, that felt a little off. Let me go back and check the note. Like, let me try this. Let me try that. And now I've taken that knowledge and I've applied it, right? So I'm doing deliberate practice on those reps. As soon as I've done that, I'm going to go teach it. So maybe I shoot a podcast on it. Maybe I record some videos on it. Maybe I have a team in staff. So in the team in staff, I'm like, hey, guys, let's go over some acceleration training, stuff that we can, you know, some higher level stuff, but then stuff we can use with our, you know, beginner clients that still works for them, so on and so forth, right? Because the highest form of remembering something and ingraining it is to teach the thing, right? But first, right, I'm going to learn, take notes. So I'm distilling what this means to me. Then I have to put it to work. Meaning it can't stay in theory. I have to work with it. I have to, you know, kind of get my hands dirty. I think this is where people kind of drop the ball a lot, right? Because it's like you're reading stuff, you're learning it, and then it's like, oh, okay, cool, that's interesting. Boom, and you go and you don't do anything with it.
And then how much of a factor do you feel energy and focus comes into play in this?
I mean, certainly, because again, if you're, I can't do, you know, the foundation of deliberate practice means that I'm focused on the task at hand, right? Just like the book flow. If I'm trying to do a thing, but then I'm checking my phone in between, this guy's talking to me, I'm thinking about like what I have to do later on. Well, guess what? Like I'm not going to be very present, and I can't, in literally by definition, it can't be deliberate practice, right? So it's better to do smaller chunks. I'd rather have somebody do 20 minutes of deliberate practice 7 days a week than do an hour and a half of, you know, deliberate practice once a week, but you got a bunch of distractions going on, right? So frequency to me is better. The nervous system does better with that, right? And so that kind of model of like, I learn it and I take notes and then I do it. And then after I do it, I teach it, right? And, but by the way, teach it in different ways. Again, we could, you know, get on a show. Like I'll sometimes record, you know, go through a ton of learning, record a podcast on the topic and be really prepared. I got my notes. I just did the whole thing and now I'm teaching it. Right. And then guess what? Now this knowledge is getting ingrained very quickly, right? Much quicker than if like it comes in, I don't do anything with it. Cause that's what you know, I hear people go pretty often. Like I'll talk to them about something like, oh yeah, I know. I said, interesting. Will you tell me a little bit more about how you know? Oh, no, I read about this. I said, oh, okay, have you done it? No, I haven't really done it. I said, then how do you know? Well, like, I read about it. I said, man, to know and not to do is not to know, right? And the thing is, you know, but you didn't haven't built a skill set, so you don't really know. You know, knowing happens through work and experience. That's how you get wisdom, by doing the thing, right? And I mean, that's where the Stoics were so great. Like, Stoics talked about the things that they did, right? Not the things that they talked about. Their lessons were happened through work, right? Through experience. And I think that's, you know, again, if we zoomed out, and it's very interesting, because I think it's in Daniel Cole's book, it talks about, you know, what's the difference between, you know, the elite people and then the good people, and then like just the kind of like, okay, you know, or it was like elite and very good. Well, it's the hours of deliberate practice. That's it, right? It's not like talent. That's why it's called the talent code, right? Sure, genetically, we can have certain things and so on and so forth. But really, at the end of the day, I think that's a very empowering thing. A very empowering thing is to know that, like, if I put enough deliberate practice into a skill set, I can become better, and I can become better than anybody if I put in enough work, right? To me, that's very empowering. When people are like, oh, well, you know, like, this person has this advantage and that advantage. I'm like, no, at the end of the day, if I put it on paper and you say, this is how many hours of deliberate practice this person put in, and you can like excel and put in more hours, I guarantee you, you'll be exceptionally good at what you do.
And then where has your brain been lately? Where have you been focusing your attention and learning about?
I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing, because I do have an absurd amount of things going on. So, you know, how does that look like for me? For example, you know, I might have an evening where I'm like, oh, I'm going to spend an hour learning some marketing stuff, right? And from, you know, that marketing stuff, now I might go and apply the thing, just like I said I would. I spend a lot of time on right now diving deeper into, you know, I've really been into Alex Natera's isometric training, force plates. I would say speed and acceleration, which I have a really, really good grasp on, but it's like I'm taking a deeper step into the training side of things. So that's been something that I'm pretty into. But it honestly is a lot of things, because again, I have the brick and mortar business, which is the gym. I have online consulting business that helps gym owners build their businesses. I have Athlete for Life, which is basically, you know, training the way that I train and helping people be athletes for life, look, feel, and perform like an athlete.
And why do you feel like that's important for people to do?
I mean, here's the deal, because first of all, it's like most clients that come through here don't want to do just one thing, right? Like everybody... it's like, hey, I want to look better, but I don't want to feel like crap. Nobody wants to feel like crap, right? And they want to be able to do stuff. Now, what is that do? I got a client, Tim, 55, plays golf, plays soccer at a, you know, kind of semi-pro-ish competitive level, right? You have to be an athlete for that. You know, but the thing is, I just had a, you know, a lady that's 72 was like, hey, look, like I want to, like my grandson runs up to me and jumps into my arms. Like I want to be able to like catch him, grab him, pick him up, and, you know, kind of put him over my head. That's an athletic movement. That's you know, deceleration and then a clean and press, basically, right? And that's their do. Oh, I say, oh, what else do you want to do? And it's like, well, I really like going for long hikes. You know, like, man, like right now I can't go for an 8-mile hike. It'll crush me. Okay, well, that means, man, that's an athlete for life. So what does that look like? It's different for different people, but being strong, being able to, again, catch yourself. Like, look, 1 out of 5 people over the age of 55 that fall break their hip. You know, breaking your hip is like one of the most, I would say, stressful injuries. Like you're out for 6 to 9 months. Most people put on a lot of weight. You know, if you're over the age, I think, of 60 or 65, I think you die within a year. I mean, it's crazy. But falling and catching yourself, that's agility. That's quickness. That's reactivity. That's power, right? And we lose power faster than we lose strength. And then faster, and we lose muscle mass. And yet very few programs work on that. So when I look at the, you know, the people that have come through our gyms, you know, the one that we have in Slovenia and here, we've coached now over 12,000 people. It's always, I want to look, feel, and perform better, right? Like, and so why would you not, you know, basically people want to be, they want to be, whether they're saying it or not, they want to be athletes for life. Again, what that looks like for me, like I'm about to turn 43. And it's like, I still train with a lot of my NFL guys. I still do a lot of athletic stuff. I play basketball. Like, that gives me joy. It gives me power. It gives me ability, right? I want to be prepared. I mean, this is one of those things where people are like, oh, here we go. Sounds corny. No, but like, I want to be prepared to always take care of my family from a physical standpoint. I want to be able to, if I need to hike for 2 days, no problem, right? I want to be able to sprint full speed, no problem. I want to be able to lift people up, do this, that, the other, no problem, right? And for most people, they were like, I've trained some pro bodybuilders and whatnot, but like, apart from like them, nobody comes in and goes like, I want to be as jacked as possible. I don't care about my mobility. Don't care if I get out of breath walking up the stairs. Don't care if I can't, quickly explode, catch, jump, this, that, without tearing a muscle. No, like nobody, like, when you start questioning people, like, oh, well, tell me a little bit more about, like, if I could wave a magic wand and you woke up tomorrow and your body was the way that you wanted it to be, look, feel, perform. What would be there? What wouldn't be there? And when they start talking, there's always aspects of performance in there, always, right? And so, again, like to me, a comprehensive program like this is, I just call it the Athlete for Life method, but it's like includes jumps, sprints, throws, quickness, reactivity, plyometrics. Now, how that looks like for, again, somebody that's 23 versus 55 versus the lady at 72 might be different. Their starting point might be different. But to me, the coolest shit about, like, if you come to Vigor Ground is that you'll see, like, people in their 50s, 60s, and even 70s, and they're savages, man. Like, you'd legitimately be like, hold on, that's not what, like, an average 7-year-old looks like or performs like or moves like. Or you're just like, wow, that's crazy. But it's like this idea, and this is what I love, is like, and Peter Attia, I think, popularized it, right? Like, what do you want your last 10 years of life to be like? Like, what do you want to be able to do? He calls it the centenarians, right? That last decade. And it's like, what do you want to be able to do? Well, okay, let's start training for that now. Like, I don't want to be 80 and not be able to do stuff. Like, I want to be 80. Man, I want to go for a hike. I want to be able to jump. I want to be able to do it. You know what I mean? I have to train for it now. This is what people don't understand. If you're not training for it now, later on, it's going to be way harder, right? And so, again, it gives you more life. My ability to do more stuff allows me to have more life. It allows me to enjoy my life more, right? Because it's that whole, this whole idea, like, where today, yeah, we're able to live longer, but not necessarily like, are those years a better life? Or are you always sick, hurt, in joint pain? And I hear this all the time, right? Like, essentially what that, it's like, oh, wait till you're, well, I'm 37, man. I'm like, okay, well, cool. I'm 43. Like, I had an L5, S1. L4 herniation, L3 bulge from oral nerve entrapment, and got myself to where I'm not in pain. I can do pretty amazing things for where I'm at. So you tell yourself a story. Well, what happens when you age? No, you let it happen, right? These statistics actually, this will kind of blow your mind a little bit, right? Like, so muscle mass decreases 3 to 8% per decade from 30 to 60 years old, and declines even faster after that. Power and speed decreases 17 to 23% per decade after age 35. Strength decreases by 10 to 15% per decade. Mobility is down by 20% by the time you reach 50. And years of aging continues to drop at a rate of around 1% per year. VO2 max declines by around 10% per decade. Now, caveat. That's what happens in normal adults as they age. In some, it can be even more pronounced. Let's just say that you're 30 now. At 50, you'll be 25% weaker, 30% slower, 20% less mobile, 12% smaller, and you'll get out of breath climbing the stairs. Doesn't sound good, does it? The good news is, with proper training, you can maintain a large portion of all those capacities. And in some cases, you can even keep improving them. So strength, VO2 max, mobility, and muscle mass can be increased even after 60, though speed might be a little bit harder, right? But it means that you can completely fight this natural decline, because the stats that I gave you are averages. But on average, people stop training, they stop eating well, they stop moving, they stop putting focus into power training, right? And the people that I train, the people that come here, they're like, nah, man, I want a different life. I want a better life. And it's absolutely possible. So the story you tell inside of your head, again, is like, then determines like your beliefs, and then determines the direction you're going to take things. And that's what I think is really, really cool, right? Because if you're 45, by the time you're 50, you could be in the best shape of your life. How insanely powerful is that?
Yeah. So one of my mentors is he's a track coach in the Bay Area, a guy named Remy Korkemi, who him himself, he's 96 and killing it, still on the track, but from the Ukraine, one of the greatest speed coaches of all time. But so he has guys that he's master's level track. Dude, it's crazy. They're like 55 years old and they're still running sub 10.7, 10.5. Like it's incredible. Just like as an extreme example of that.
By the way, I got to bring this up. Did you see Cat Williams run the 40?
I did not know.
Dude, he ran a 4.97.
That's very impressive.
Some people have said it might have been like a 5.15, but he's 52 and you got to see the video. This dude is moving, front side mechanics perfect. I mean, so shout out to Cat Williams, like much respect, but again, 52, this guy is like moving.
I saw Tom Brady's 40 that he just ran too is faster than what he ran at the combine.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So this is a story, and I think it's hopefully changing. And like, this is, I love talking about this stuff. I mean, one of the topics that, you know, I go around and speak on is that, because I'm so fired up about it. Right. Because it's, and again, the science of this and how it looks like, you know, with different people looks differently, but, it's so empowering to believe like, hey man, like I can get, like, I'm 57, I'm 49, I'm 61. Like, I can get stronger. And it's crazy because it's like some of the most dedicated people that I coach are like 45 plus, right? And because they're like, man, I want to continue to improve my quality of life. And I know I can do it through quality strength training, working on power, explosiveness, improving my nutrition, obviously lifestyle habits. And it's the dopest thing ever, man. Like I got a 62-year-old that's about to be 63, one of the top vascular surgeons in the nation. And he loves playing golf. And about a month ago, you know, he comes in and he's just like, I got to tell you something, man. He's like, I play golf with like these kids that are 20, 30 years younger than me, right? He calls them kids. But and he's like, I literally like drove further than I ever have in my life and beat them at age 62. And he's like, this is insane how much strength training, like his mind was so blown because he was like, I couldn't do any of this stuff when I was in my 20s and my 30s. But for 3.5 years diligently, you know, twice a week, strength training, comes in and does conditioning twice a week with me. And, you know, he deadlifted 405 for a double about 3 months ago. And he's like, I've never imagined I could ever do this. This is insane. And so he's, you know, his back pain that he had is gone. Like it. And my point is, he's 62 going to 63. He's in the best shape of his life. So there's nothing stopping you from doing that, right? And we talked about like kind of like, hey, don't worry about all the steps. Just work on the next step and just keep building. And like in a year and two from now, like you could legitimately be in the best shape of your life.
And then to all the leaders who listen to this, with everything that we've talked about, what do you feel like is the number one thing that they could do to gain a competitive advantage, whether it's in sports, business?
I mean, look, I think that this word expansion, you know, Tony Robbins talks about that, like progress equals happiness, that as corny as this sounds, but it's like, I could give you everything that you wanted in life, but then if you stopped growing, you know, subconsciously, you wouldn't be fulfilled. It wouldn't be meaningful. So I, you know, and there's seasons in life, right? So maybe a season is if you're feeling like, you know, your health is took a whack because you've been working really hard in a business or whatever, man, it's the season to like have expansion, progress, growth in that area. But I think as human beings, not I think, you know, there's a great book by Sebastian Junger, and he talks about the three things that drive our intrinsic motivation, our internal motivation, right? And there are these three C's: competence, contribution, and connection. So means competence is like, if you get better at stuff, you'll be motivated. You'll be intrinsically motivated, right? If you contribute, so giving back in some way, you know, whether like we got a charity event this Saturday where we're raising money for scholarships, whether it's on a day-to-day giving back. To me, a lot of the stuff that I create, the content that's free, to me, that's contribution. I'm involved in a lot of charities and a lot of programs. It's very fulfilling for me. And in connection, like human connection. I mean, we found out through COVID what happens when you disconnect people, when we are social creatures, we're tribal creatures. If you separate us, we become depressed, we become anxious, we become stressed out, so it's like for yourself, you need those three things. If you lead teams, you need those three things, right? Those are like these foundational things that like help drive us forward. And again, I would call that all in a bucket of expansion. So, if you feel like you're stuck because you haven't been challenging yourself to grow, that's, you start doing that and a lot of the things will fix themselves.
That's beautiful. And to wrap this up real quick, Luca, a little bit of rapid fire. We usually say best book or research paper that you read in the past year, but with you, let's say the last month.
I finished, put it this way. I'm huge into restaurants because I think it's an incredible business, the hardest business there is to run. So I take a lot of inspiration from it. Like one of my favorite books is Setting the Table by Danny Meyer. But there was a book that came out called Unreasonable Hospitality. I read through it twice and I read the second time through about a month ago. So it's by Will Goddara, who used to run 11 Madison Park, number one restaurant in the world. It's phenomenal. It's an absolute must read for anybody in the service industry and anybody that runs a business. Unreasonable Hospitality. So yeah, that would be my choice.
Biggest mentor you've had in your life?
So many, man. I truly can't. I'd be doing a disservice. I'd say my father for sure, because I mean, it's like he taught me a lot and a lot of challenging things because, when we moved to London and when we came back to Slovenia, he stayed there to try to make a better life for us. So he was away from you from the time I was like 10, 11 years old. But he taught me probably, more lessons than anybody. But there's been so many pivotal figures in my life. One of them for sure, my basketball coach, Boris Zvereshchuk, because I truly think that, if it wasn't for him, I don't know if I would have went to the States. I might have, I was going down the wrong path in crime, and so he was definitely a pivotal figure. But there's so many that like I wish, I could shout them all out on here.
And then the habit that you've added or taken away from your life in the past year that's had the biggest impact.
I think something that's been really important for me is to trust and delegate. And seriously, because like I mentioned it earlier that like I have been historically a yes person and like I'll do everything person, and it's impossible. So the lesson is who, not how, which is another great book by Dan Sullivan, by the way. But that was like that really stood out for me because I was like, hey, I can't figure out all the hows. I need to go deeper into my genius, my zones of genius, and I need to have others, who's help me in certain areas. So that's an actual skill set and habit that I've had to develop and I'm continuing to develop because I'm not great at it yet. But very, very powerful because if you can give people to, tasks and work to do that they're better at than you and they enjoy it and it takes stress and energy off your plate so you can do more of what's your genius, it's life-changing.
And then, in your time when you saw the best athletes when you were a professional basketball player, like the best basketball players that you saw, and then now with who you train and who your peers are in terms of coaching, like the best of the best, what attribute do you believe that is most like consistent that most of them share outside of like genetics and physical potential?
I mean, I'll say they're competitors, like just hungry to compete. The best of the best, they want to compete. They want to go up against the best, and they put in again. We touched on this, but they put in more deliberate practice in every area that's necessary to become elite, to become the best in the world. Not just training, but nutrition, recovery. Skill work, every like film, everything, right? So they're hungry competitors, and they're maximally dedicated to becoming the best. And it, by the way, that also, encapsulates having, buying the team buy-in and making sure that they build the team camaraderie and everything else. So those are the two that I for sure I'm like, man, those people have.
Thank you, Luca. Your YouTube's hot sauce, your IG's hot sauce. What's the best way for people to connect with you?
I mean, those probably definitely the best two. I mean, if you know, a lot of my kind of resources, if you're in a fitness coaching space, are at lucaholsevar.com, but Instagram at lucaholsevar, YouTube lucaholsevar. Those are my podcast is Vigor Life Podcast, where it's very definitely towards coaches. You know, speak to a lot of coaches there. And but you know, I'm also, if you hit me up, I answer. There's no bots. I'm a real person. You know what I'm saying? That's my MO, but that's probably the best places to find out more about me.
You killed it. Thank you so much for coming on Super Athlete Radio. Look forward to meeting you in person.
Yes, sir. My pleasure, brother.